Hello and welcome to our online press conference. I'm Tom Pelton of the Environmental Integrity Project. We're a 21-year-old nonprofit organization dedicated to enforcing environmental laws and strengthening policy to protect public health and the environment. Today, we and 12 allied environmental groups from across the country filed a federal lawsuit against EPA seeking to force the agency to follow the Clean Water Act by strengthening and updating weak and sometimes non-existent federal standards for water pollution from oil refineries, chemical and fertilizer plants, plastics factories, and other heavily polluting industries. We will hear from six speakers today, and then we'll open it up to questions from reporters. Our first speaker is Jen Duggan, Deputy Director of the Environmental Integrity Project. Then we'll have Kristen Schlemmer, Legal Director of the Bayou City Waterkeepers in Houston. Then from Louisiana, we'll have Naomi Yoder, Staff Scientist from Healthy Gulf. Then from Chicago, Mitch McNeil, Chair of the Surfrider Foundation's Chicago Chapter. Then Diane Wilson, the San Antonio Bay Estuarian Waterkeeper. And finally, Eric Buescher, Managing Attorney at the San Francisco Baykeeper. We also are going to have available for questions from the press, Hannah Connor, Senior Attorney for the Center for Biological Diversity. So our first speaker will be Jen Duggan, Deputy Director of the Environmental Integrity Project. Go ahead, Jen.
Thank you, Tom. And thank you to the EIP legal and research teams that are joining us today, today's speakers, and all of our partners who are working with us for clean water. And welcome to everyone who's joined the call. We really appreciate you being here today. We're announcing the federal lawsuit that EIP and our partners are filing against EPA for failing to require the use of modern wastewater treatment controls for seven industries: oil refineries, chemical and plastics plants, and facilities that manufacture fertilizers, pesticides, and non-ferrous metals like aluminum. These industries are some of the dirtiest, releasing billions of gallons of wastewater into our rivers, streams, and lakes each year. Wastewater that contains nitrogen that fuels algae blooms and chokes the life out of waterways, and toxics that are harmful to humans and fish like benzene and selenium. At the same time, the pollution standards for these industries, which are supposed to reflect the best available technology and keep pace with technological advances over time, are ancient. They're nearly 40 years old in some cases. And EPA hasn't even set any limits at all for some pollutants, despite a requirement to do so decades ago. And that's just not allowed under the Clean Water Act. I'm sure many of us have heard the phrase, "water is life." Well, it's true. We depend on safe and clean waterways for drinking water, for food, livelihoods, healthy ecosystems, and for recreation. It's alarming, but about 50% of all river and stream miles recently evaluated in the U.S. are not meeting water quality standards. And that means they're so polluted they can't be safely used for their intended uses, like sources of drinking water or swimming, or they're just not healthy for aquatic life. We know that climate change is only going to exacerbate our current problems with declining water quality, as warming weather causes increases in these toxic algae blooms, more intense rain events wash even more pollutants into our waterways, and more frequent superstorms overload stormwater controls and flood waste pits. We have to do better. We have a great law already on the books. The Clean Water Act sets out a framework for reducing and ultimately eliminating industrial pollution so that our waterways are fishable, swimmable, and safe and healthy for humans and aquatic life. And one of the most important parts of that law is that EPA must set pollution limits based on the best available technology and then revise those limits at least once every 5 years, where data shows that treatment technologies have improved. But EPA has failed to comply with this important part of the law for decades for most industries. And the result is that more pollution pours into waterways than should be allowed, Most recently, on January 31st, EPA made its decision not to revise the water pollution standards for oil refineries, chemical and plastic plants, and facilities that manufacture fertilizers, pesticides, and non-ferrous metals. EPA has given these industries a free pass to pollute for 30 and nearly 40 years in some cases, while downstream communities have paid the price. Here are a few examples. The standards for refineries have not been updated since 1985 and have no limits at all for selenium, benzene, lead, mercury, chlorides, and sulfates. EIP found that wastewater from 81 refineries discharged over 15.7 million pounds of nitrogen, 60,000 pounds of selenium, and 1.6 billion pounds of chlorates, sulfates, and other dissolved solids in just 1 year. The Chevron El Segundo refinery in California, for example, released 1.6 million pounds of nitrogen into Santa Monica Bay alone in 2021. It was the top nitrogen discharger of all U.S. refineries that year. And this nitrogen pollution in coastal waters can have serious adverse impacts on marine life. EPA has not updated the standards for fertilizer plants since 1986, and the current standards for that industry do not limit selenium, chromium, cadmium, cyanide, lead, and other pollutants. One subcategory of plants, nitrogen fertilizer plants, released an estimated 7.7 million pounds of total nitrogen pollution in 2021. And unless EPA acts, this number will only increase when proposed new plants come online that will expand production for this industry by more than half. For example, the largest ammonia manufacturing plant in the US, the CF Industries plant in Donaldsonville, Louisiana, discharged an average of over 8,000 pounds of nitrogen per day. EPA has not updated the standards for approximately 120 plastic forming and molding facilities since 1984. Those standards don't have limits for phthalates, PFAS, nitrogen, microplastics, and other pollutants that are discharged by these plants. The standards for organic chemicals and plastic facilities, which apply to approximately 609 plants across the US, have not been revised since 1993. Facilities in this category manufacture plastic resins, PFAS chemicals, synthetic fibers, benzene, solvents, and a host of other chemicals. The current standards don't include limits on PFAS, nutrients, or plastic pellets called nurdles that get into our waterways. These nurdles can act as toxic sponges for other chemicals, transport bacteria, and are often mistaken for food by birds and aquatic life. The standards for inorganic chemical plants have not been revised since 1984. And the sector is one of the largest industrial dischargers of toxic pollution in the US, according to EPA. The current standards don't limit nitrogen, dioxides, PCBs, and other pollutants. EPA estimates that 229 of these plants dumped over 2 billion pounds of pollution into our waterways in 2019.
This is Jen Duggan.
The standards for approximately 31 pesticide manufacturing facilities have not been updated since 1998. The current standards don't limit nitrogen despite significant discharges from this industry. For example, the Syngenta facility in St. Gabriel, Louisiana, discharged over 303,000 pounds of total nitrogen in 2021. The standards for the non-ferrous metals manufacturing sector haven't been revised since 1990. EPA estimates that 56 facilities dumped over 100 million pounds of pollution into our waterways in 2019. But the current limits do not include any controls on stormwater pollution, which can have high levels of fluoride, zinc, nickel, and cadmium. These facilities are located across the U.S. It is a national problem. Many of these plants are clustered along the Gulf Coast in Texas and Louisiana, and you'll hear more about those impacts from several other speakers later in the conference, as well as San Francisco and Chicago impacts. But there are many other impacted communities. For example, there are 7 large refineries in Los Angeles, 5 of which discharge down the same channel that flows out to Los Angeles Harbor, near many beaches and parks that the local community would like to enjoy. Knoxville, Tennessee hosts 2 organic chemical plants, a plastics plant, a secondary aluminum smelter, and 2 secondary silver plants. Newark's Chemical Corridor is a stretch of chemical plants that border the Ironbound neighborhood, where Portuguese, Brazilian, Central American, and Black residents call themselves a sacrifice zone. And there are many more examples across the country. I want to emphasize that it is our most vulnerable communities that unfairly bear a disproportionate burden of this industrial pollution. Nearly 2/3 of inorganic and organic chemical plants, pesticide manufacturing facilities, petroleum refineries, and plastic plants are located within 1 mile of communities with a large percentage of low income or people of color. The unchecked pollution from these plants hurts people's livelihoods and quality of life. It puts our health at risk, and it shifts the cost of cleaning up this pollution to communities instead of the companies who create it. It's not fair, and it's not allowed under the Clean Water Act. The good news is that there are available technologies and common sense strategies to clean up this pollution. Denitrification, a well-established technology that removes nitrate and nitrite compounds from wastewater, is already required for municipal sewage treatment plants across the U.S. and can be installed at refineries and other large sources of nitrogen pollution. Refineries, for example, could reduce nitrogen discharges by about 50 to 75% if they were required to use this technology. Carbon and mechanical filtration technologies like activated carbon filtration and reverse osmosis can remove heavy metals and PFAS from wastewater before it's discharged to waterways. These technologies are available now, and there's no excuse for not requiring big oil and petrochemical plants to use them. I want to acknowledge the actions that EPA is taking to reduce water pollution from coal-fired power plants, slaughterhouses, and some sources of PFAS. These are important and long overdue, but it is nowhere near enough to address the backlog or the mandate of the Clean Water Act to keep pace with technology. The standards for 40 of the 59 regulated industries were last updated 30 or more years ago, and 17 of those date back to the 1970s. We expect EPA to do better and to do its job to protect and restore our waterways by finally requiring modern wastewater treatment controls for big oil and petrochemical industries. This is, after all, what the Clean Water Act has required for the past 50 years. I want to close by emphasizing that our waterways are public resources. They belong to each and every one of us, not private companies. If our lawsuit is successful, we'll be on a path to cleaning up toxic and harmful nutrient pollution from more than 1,100 plants across the country, and we'll be that much closer to realizing the promise of the Clean Water Act. Safe, clean, and healthy waterways for communities and aquatic life. Thank you, Tom.
Thanks very much. That was Jen Duggan, Deputy Director of the Environmental Integrity Project. Our next speaker is Kristen Schlemmer, Legal Director of the Houston-based Bayou City Waterkeeper. Go ahead, Kristen.
Hi, I'm Kristen Schlemmer. I'm the Legal Director and Waterkeeper for Bayou City Waterkeeper. We are a water justice nonprofit based in Houston, Texas, and we do work across the greater Houston region down to the coast and along the Houston Ship Channel. So in Houston, we've been forced to live with unhealthy pollution for decades. We're suing the EPA today because they've had the power to help us in a real way, but they've delayed action action for far too long. We're ready for action now. 7 of the 10 worst polluters for total dissolved solids dumped into waterways in 2021 were in Texas. I'm going to talk about 2 of the worst, both of which are located in the greater Houston region where I work and live, and what this means for the people who live here. So the worst polluter for total dissolved solids, according to the report, or according to a report that EIP released earlier this year and as part of this lawsuit, is the ExxonMobil Baytown Refinery. ExxonMobil released into the Houston Ship Channel almost 127 million pounds of chlorides, sulfites, and other dissolved solids, all of which can be harmful to aquatic life. This in itself is astounding, 127 million pounds. It becomes even more so when you consider what it means to be the worst, when you think about who and what this 127 million pounds of pollutants affects. Baytown, where the refinery is located, isn't an industrial zone. It's a small city. It's east of Houston. 80,000 people live, work, and go to school there. And they're all forced to do this alongside this pollution, day in and day out. Baytown gets its name from the beautiful bays that surround it, but signs posted on the bay's edge warn that the fish might be too toxic to consume. From Baytown, this water flows into Galveston Bay, which connects to a string of bays and flows into the Gulf of Mexico. Millions of people rely on Galveston for sustenance through both commercial and recreational fishing. And as the signs in Baytown show, insufficiently checked water pollution can make this food unhealthy to consume. 127 million isn't just a very big number. With this bigger context, I hope you'll see the very large number is connected to very large stakes for both human and environmental health in our region. One other location I'd like to highlight is the Phillips 66 Sweeney Refinery south of Houston, which exceeded its permitted pollution limits 44 times from 2019 to 2021, but was penalized just $30,000, according to EPA records. 42 of the refinery's 44 violations were for unpermitted cyanide pollution in the Brazos River, upstream from a string of popular public beaches that are filled with people nearly every weekend, as well as a national wildlife refuge. Again, 44 violations present really high stakes for the environment and for people, which $30,000 doesn't even begin to offset. That's not even a tap on the wrist for a company like Phillips 66. And I'm going to borrow some language from San Francisco Baykeeper Sejal Choksi Chu that I've heard in the past, which is actually more like a fist bump between regulators and industry. When Houston pops up in the news, it's often because of disasters like Hurricane Harvey. But this lawsuit calls attention to the fact that many people in the Houston region are being forced to live with another kind of disaster that's invisible to us every single day. For far too long, we in Houston and along the Gulf have been treated like a sacrifice zone, with the greatest burdens falling on low-income Black or Brown communities like the people who are living near the Ship Channel in Houston. With our lawsuit, we're saying as loudly and as clearly as we can, it's time to do something about it. The EPA must take action and update the effluent guidelines for refineries and petrochemical plants to address the realities of living in a place like Houston in the 21st century. Thank you.
Thanks. That was Kristen Schlemmer, legal director for the Bayou City Waterkeeper. Our next speaker is Naomi Yoder, staff scientist for the Louisiana-based Healthy Gulf. Go ahead, Naomi.
Thank you so much, Tom. So I wanted to speak a little bit about Louisiana today. So we know that everywhere on land is tied intimately to water, but few places illustrate this connection more clearly than southern Louisiana. Coastal Louisiana's land consists of swamps, bayous, wetlands, and rivers that have sustained people for millennia. Southeast Louisiana is home to the outfall of the mighty Mississippi River, which drains almost half of the contiguous United States. The wetlands in coastal Louisiana provide habitat for vast numbers of fish and aquatic species that we depend on for sustenance, livelihood, and ecosystem services. Many fish and crustaceans we eat use wetlands as breeding grounds or in their juvenile life stages before they migrate out to sea. Young life stages of any organism are very susceptible to harm from toxins, including runoff from industrial effluent. Inadequate effluence guidelines threatens Louisiana's very way of life and the ecosystems we depend on. Louisiana is one of the petrochemical states in the United States where fossil fuel refinement and chemical facilities have become deeply entrenched, in part due to a notoriously lax regulatory environment. The industrial corridors that now exist in South Louisiana are the same places where people were enslaved by the hundreds of thousands. The Mississippi River was lined with hundreds of plantations. As enslavers fell from power, freed people established freedmen's towns or historically Black towns in place of defunct plantations. Now the fossil fuel industry has taken the place of enslavers, saddling these same towns with pollution burdens beyond the limits of what any person should have to endure. Mosaic fertilizer plants in Louisiana are a prime example. Two Mosaic fertilizer facilities straddle the river in St. James Parish. Mosaic Faustina and its sibling Mosaic Uncle Sam plant, which Uncle Sam hosts a phosphogypsum waste pile. And those are extremely egregious offenders. Mosaic Faustina sits in the 5th district of St. James Parish, a large part of the parish whose population is Black, about 95%. Mosaic Uncle Sam neighbors the town of Convent, a freedman's town. Uncle Sam releases 183.8 million gallons a day of processed water into the Mississippi River. Outdated limits allow each of these enormous fertilizer plants and another facility just upriver, the CF Industries facility that was mentioned earlier, to discharge over 13,000 pounds of nitrates each day, along with other metals and sulfates, and that's for each plant. We often hear that nitrogen and phosphorus compounds from Midwest farm fertilizer runoff are fueling the Gulf Dead Zone, but it's clear that Louisiana's own fertilizer manufacturers also contribute to Gulf water quality problems. The outfalls for Mosaic Faustina and Uncle Sam are in the Mississippi River, upstream from the drinking water intakes for St. James and St. John parishes most immediately. There are dozens of other facilities in this same stretch of river that also have inadequate effluent limits. Effluent from these facilities directly impact people of color and poorer people disproportionately. The story of effluent in South Louisiana is a story of social and ecological injustice that has perpetuated for generations. Effluent pollution makes up one piece of current and legacy pollution burden from air, water, and soils that is perpetuated by environmental racism and has scarred the people for hundreds of years now. Thank you.
Thank you. That was Naomi Yoder, staff scientist with Healthy Gulf. Now we move from Louisiana up to Illinois, where we have Mitch McNeil, chair of the Chicago chapter of the Surfrider Foundation. Go ahead, Mitch.
All right. Thanks to Tom Payton and the EIP for listening to us today. I appreciate the chance to talk about Lake Michigan and represent the Great Lakes region. You know, millions of people in the Chicago area rely on Lake Michigan for clean and safe drinking water. And the lake's health, beauty, and recreational opportunities are central to the identities and quality of life of people across the region. That's why it is outrageous that just south of Chicago, the BP Whiting Refinery in Northwest Indiana dumps 18 million gallons of wastewater into the lake every day, with very little regulation and grossly inadequate pollution controls. A recent Environmental Integrity Project report revealed that this refinery was one of the worst polluters in the nation, releasing into the lake 3,500 pounds of selenium in 2021. They also dump 31 million pounds of total dissolved solids into the lake. Millions of pounds of chloride, millions of pounds of sulfate, 41,000 pounds of oil and grease, 15,000 pounds of phosphorus, 158 pounds of arsenic, and 5 pounds of benzene. I am someone who can personally attest to the impact of pollution on this part of the lake. For years, I, along with the Great Lakes surfing community, have surfed the south end of the lake. The waves are big there. One of our favorite surf breaks is adjacent to the Whiting Refinery. But that enjoyment of the lake comes at a price. Surfers who use the beach near the refinery frequently suffer rashes, hives, eye and ear infections, and occasionally gastrointestinal upsets. We have smelled petroleum in the water and occasionally seen globs of oil. We do worry about our health after swimming or surfing in the lake near the refinery. We shouldn't have to do that. The lake should be fishable and swimmable for everyone. That's what the Clean Water Act requires. For some people who live in the area, this is the only waterfront access they have, and it's unfair that BP is diminishing their quality of life. It's time for EPA to update and strengthen its outdated and weak standards for pollution control systems, not only at refineries, but also chemical plants, plastic factories, and other petrochemical industries across the US. EPA needs to step up and implement the Clean Water Act for the sake of Lake Michigan and all waterways across 50 states. Thank you.
Thanks, Mitch. That was Mitch McNeil, chair of the Chicago chapter of the Surfrider Foundation. Next, we have Eric Buescher, managing attorney at the San Francisco Baykeeper in California. Go ahead, Eric.
Thank you, Tom. Thank you, everybody, for being here and to all of my colleagues who have spoken before me. I'm Eric Buescher. I'm the managing attorney at San Francisco Baykeeper. Our mission is to defend San Francisco Bay from the biggest threats and to hold polluters and government agencies accountable to create healthy communities and help wildlife thrive. The Clean Water Act, a tool that we've used hundreds of times since 1990, depends upon a multi-pronged approach to achieve clean, livable, healthy water. EPA must set high standards, both water quality standards and technologically based discharge limits to eliminate pollution, and then those standards must be enforced. Here in the Bay, we have a long history of hosting 5 active oil refineries, and that means Baykeeper has a long history of fighting refinery pollution, forcing regulators to set new standards, and then enforcing the ones that exist for 3 decades. We've caught refineries polluting red-handed. We captured drone footage of a refinery dumping petroleum coke, a dirty refinery byproduct and dirtier source of energy burned in other parts of the world, into the bay and into the nearby neighborhoods in Benicia. We're currently in court forcing the company to clean up its conduct. One of the many harmful consequences of the refinery's existence and operation in the northern part of San Francisco Bay is selenium pollution in the water. San Francisco Bay is officially recognized as impaired by the EPA for selenium pollution, but unfortunately, the local selenium water quality standard that is incorporated into Clean Water Act permits for the refineries is inadequate, and the permits allow discharges in the order of over 1,100 pounds per year of selenium that are harmful to fish. The result is that many fish, including species that support subsistence fishing in many communities around the Bay Delta, contain toxic selenium. This selenium bioaccumulates over time, and the refineries are discharging hundreds of pounds each of selenium into the bay each year. One of our first legal actions in the 90s was to hold ExxonMobil accountable for its selenium pollution in San Francisco Bay. And that work that started 3 decades ago continues with this lawsuit. To meet the currently in-